Today on Vox Talks Economics, what's the best way to learn about the risks of AI? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember, subscribe, follow us on Instagram as well. You'll find us at Vox Talks Economics. In March 2023, many experts supported an open letter that called for a six-month
pause in giant AI experiments.
And that development of these AIs should go ahead
only once we are confident that their effects will be positive and their risks will be manageable.
Well, this letter made headlines for a couple of days, but this worldwide pause, it was never seriously considered. But imagine that it had been. Would this have even been the best way to learn about these risks? In our second podcast from the 79th Economic Policy Panel, I caught up with Joshua Gans of the University of Toronto, who presented his research that helps us to understand how we can best learn about the potential harms from AI. Joshua, welcome.
Hi, great to be here.
Take us back to this famous open letter. Why was it so unusual?
I have worked for many years in the economics of innovation. To put it very simply, the main problem in that entire field is that we get too little information and too little in the way of adoption. The private incentives to do both are much lower than the social value of these things, so we get too little of it.
Mm-hmm.
What the pause letter was taking what was currently artificial intelligence, I think it's safe to say, one of the largest technological opportunities going on. And the people there were saying, we should stop. We should pause for a while and take a breath. And this was unusual to me, given the usual problem that we have is not getting things quickly enough, as opposed to slowing these sorts of things down. But the other part of it was there was two other factors to do with this. First is the signatories. The signatories weren't like people who are Luddites or anything like that, or people who are sort of wary of technology. In fact, they were, for the most part, the people who had actually been responsible for inventing these things.
Yeah.
And no, they weren't all of them. There's a substantial disagreement in that community. But if you create something, you generally don't seem to be saying, hey, let's wait a second. Now, it's not unprecedented. We had the movie Oppenheimer last year, which I suspect could give anybody an Oppenheimer complex. Are they going to destroy the world? And I don't think it's a bad thing for scientists to think about that, that's for sure. But again, I was surprised. The other thing about all of this was that we hadn't had any evidence of all the worrying things so far. There's a lot of discussion of bad things that could occur. No doubt about that. That's been going on with AI since science fiction writers invented AI. That was the whole thing. And we hadn't had any of these things happening. By contrast, we'd had a whole lot of things that we, from an economics perspective, were fairly unprecedented. We'd actually had studies in the last year or so that had indicated massive increases in productivity for all sorts of tasks. And we never can measure productivity for that sort of stuff. And all of a sudden, we're getting 30, 40, 50% increases in productivity, very little in the way of doing anything more than handing people a tool. This is quite extraordinary. So it was a kind of bizarro world for me, seeing that pause letter. Not to mention the fact that I think we should take it, and I think the people who signed it understood it, that it was just we want to signal that this is a serious issue, as opposed to saying, actually do this, because there was no real means by which AI adoption or implementation or anything like that was going to be paused.
And to be clear, the people that were signing the letter, we're going to have to guess what was in their mind, but it wasn't necessarily they were worried about the end of the world. Some of them might have been. They were worried about more lower level harm, still important, but not that Oppenheimer moment. Yes.
I think there is a variation of beliefs and concerns that are throwing into that. But I think the issue from a regulatory standpoint is that we have now regulators who are saying, and again, not a bad thing, should we be doing anything about this now? Mm. Well, when they see a letter like this by noted people, we as economists normally want regulators to be very, very concerned about things that might disrupt the innovative process. But here it's giving regulators a license to lighten up on that. Oh, so we get AI delayed. wait 5 years? What's the big deal? And in fact, some of the proponents do talk like that. They say, you know, in 100 years' time, are we going to notice 5 years of change versus the destruction of all life as we know it? No. You know, it can be a compelling argument. But then again, I sit there and I think about the AI applications that I've seen. And I've seen hundreds of them because we've been doing this for well over a decade here in Toronto with startups. And we see these applications such as putting cameras around swimming pools to alert people if a toddler is drowning. And I'm like, that 5 year pause is not going to be great comfort for the parents of that toddler in that situation. And it's not out of the question that these could be issues because it's bound up with privacy. It's bound up with where the data is going. It's bound up with, I'm just proposed a situation where we're going to have AI looking at children.
Yeah.
So you can see there's a lot of issues there that could come up. So it's not a fanciful application, but it's one at which you say, you know, this is the reason we don't want to delay.
Being based in Toronto, where there is a lot of AI startup activity, you will be an academic who is closer to that startup world than many. How would they see that impact of regulation on them if they're already trying to develop their business as quickly as possible? They have funding to do that.
It adds a whole raft of uncertainty to this process. You know, the big tech companies who also face uncertainty, by the way, and may not like any of these sorts of things, they have the means to fight, plow forward, etc. If you are a startup, you can't say, well, we're going to wait and see how the regulatory things fall because you're trying to get funding and the funders are going to be worried about whether your app may be taken off the market altogether or whether some other impediment might come in or whether you're going to have trouble doing this as a global marketplace because you'll have compliance in a whole lot of different jurisdictions. Those things can be necessary for a lot of applications. The question is, given what we already have regarding product liability, safety laws, and other things, do we need an extra layer for artificial intelligence? And in particular, if we're doing that extra layer, I don't think we can lighten up on the this might delay things. I think we still have to be as concerned about that as ever.
Now, in your work, Joshua, you're looking at how best to learn about the benefits and harms. As you say, we know a little bit about that so far, but that's unlikely to be a reliable indicator of what the long-term impacts are. So it doesn't really count as empirical evidence in the way that we would usually think about it. So what did you set out to do here in this work?
I think what I wanted to do was one of the components of the pause idea, and who's very explicit about slowing down AI adoption and other things and some of the more short-term harms, particularly about disinformation and jobs, is Daron Acemoglu. Mm. He's the star economist of the world. I have spent a lot of my career sort of digesting his work and doing things. And so he was a proponent of this view, and that's a serious affair. And moreover, having debated him quite often, I realized that we have to get our understanding of why these different arguments are being made and what are the assumptions going into it. As you mentioned before, we don't really know if there are these harms of AI. That is a fact. And the fact that something hasn't happened is good, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're safe in the future or something bad couldn't happen still. And Daron and his student Tom Lensman wrote a paper last year, which I'll call put forward the case for a pause, a precautionary motive. How they dealt with that uncertainty was intriguing to me. There are two key elements. The first was that occasionally when you adopted AI, it was hard to sort of roll it back. And that's true. If it's hard to roll something back, then even if I learn something later on, I can't do anything about it. That's going to impede this process and lock you in to some degree. I don't know how much of that is salient with respect to current AI adoption, but that's a theoretical thing. The second was the process by which the regulators learned that there might be harmful things. Their assumption, once you look through the mathematics of it, was it just takes time. The longer thing a thing is done without anything happening or noticing anything bad, probably the safer it is. But if you notice something bad, you do something about it. But the process of their learning was entirely passive. I put a nicer spin on it, calling it lab learning. The idea was that we got to give the scientists the time to do experiments and investigations in the lab to see if there are any harmful things before going forward. I wondered how important was that assumption. And it turned out that if you used an alternative assumption, that the only way you can learn about, for instance, is misinformation harmful to democracy, is to let AI run out there and see what happens. You can hypothesize about that and you can do some lab experiments, but it's not really going to tell you. There's a whole industry at the moment trying to work out the job impacts of AI without actually giving anyone AI and seeing what happens to their job. At best, it can get a first-order effect, but it can't get a full equilibrium effect. I call that an old name, learning by doing. In other words, AI adoption facilitated the speed of that learning. If I took AI tomorrow and I gave it to everybody, I'd pretty quickly find out if there's something harmful. If I give it to a few people, it's going to take a little longer, and that's the trade-off. But what that meant was, from a regulatory perspective, not only is it not a case for a pause of AI, there is now a case for an acceleration of it. Let's learn this stuff quickly, because it's valuable in the future, because we can decide, oh, this is safe, we should go ahead with it, rather than sort of constantly tying our hands going forward. That was the key assumption, and so it motivated me to write a paper. These aren't the sort of papers that are sadly valued in academic economics, but they're very useful for getting your thinking straight for policy analysis. The takeaway, and it's something that Doron himself agreed to, is that you don't want to necessarily learn everything, give everybody AI. You want to work out where are the markets that we can allow this to go forward more quickly so we can learn. Where is our best learning opportunities? But at the same time, we have the same issue with respect to policy. And one of the things that I pointed out was, it's amazing to see the European Union, one of the three major economic blocks in the world, experimenting as a whole on AI adoption, especially when it has the opportunity to pick on some small country within Europe and run the experiment. I know that sounds crass, but it really is what we would do in any other circumstance. We would learn on a smaller scale, both for the harms of AI and also for the unintended consequences of regulation, and both are driven by the same forces.
If you want to find out more about what Doron Acemoglu thinks about the future of AI, it was one of the things we discussed in our most recent conversation with him, recorded in June 2023. When you subscribe to Vox Talk, search for the episode called Power and Progress.
So this is the AI Act that you're talking about, the prospective AI Act in the European Union. It sounds like you're not a fan of this.
I don't look at the Act and I see, oh, there's just crazy stuff here. I mean, it's not like some issues that happen with GDPR and everybody's got to accept cookies and it's a totally performative. Let's face it. It's not. You know, it has well thought out parts to it and thinking about certain things, but to the extent that you can do as a regulator. So I don't think of it as crazy by any means. And certainly I think pushing companies who are doing things at a large scale to know a bit more about what they're doing, transparency, what data is it trained on, etc., that's not a bad idea. And I think there's too much default to secrecy there, so that's good. The concerns I have are not for the ability of larger firms to adopt these things. The concerns I have is for that startup ecosystem. I don't know what putting a regulatory apparatus over AI for startups is going to do for that startup ecosystem in Europe. I don't know what it's going to do for people who are everywhere thinking of, will I launch a product in Europe? And we've already seen this regulatory uncertainty impede startups in their operations. And my favorite example at the moment is Anthropic. It has Claude, which is currently the best LLM. Here in Canada, it's not available. I believe in most of Europe, it's not available either. And that's just simply out of regulatory uncertainty. Now, if you're Microsoft or you're Google, you can take that. Although even Google didn't launch its generative AI products in Canada until a couple of months ago. It was a year late, just simply because of uncertainty. It's not like Canada's some crazy nation. It's just that its laws have all sorts of landmines in them for this sort of stuff. And so, you know, if it's affecting those companies, the well-resourced of this, what's it doing to the rest of them? There has to be very, very clear safe harbors constructed in a way that don't keep a finger in the pie or something like that, that can send a signal to those who are funding those startups, etc. No, no, no. It's not going to be an issue for you. If you become $100 million value Google competitor type thing, then you'll have to get yourself a compliance department. But until then, consider yourself just free to go.
In the piece of work that you've published. Is it fair to call it a thought experiment? Is that appropriate?
Well, I think it's a little bit better than a thought experiment.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I'm underplaying it, really.
It's really, it's really just what we do as economic theorists. It's laying bare some assumptions. In other words, you know, you hear these assumptions like in the pause paper and you say, when would that be a good idea?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Acemoglu put up for the case quite clear about when it would be a good idea. And then I wanted to say, well, when would it not be a good idea? I wanted to add that to it.
Yeah.
And really, my paper has both parts to it. If you believe that this is the sort of learning, then you go one direction, if not another direction. And then it becomes, let's ask ourselves what the real situation is. I have my own guesses and beliefs and things I've seen in that regard, but others will differ. But I think regulators need to be very clear about it.
Yes, there is a key role in your work for the principle of reversibility, isn't there? A lot hinges on that, because if we find out that something is causing harms, how easy is it to roll that back? Now, if you're a software company, a tech company, and you put out some new software, you issue a bug fix and everyone installs the bug fix overnight and that's fixed. You can't issue a bug fix for AI, can you?
Well, I mean, you could in certain circumstances. Of course, you can do certain things. And remember, the companies themselves, I mean, half the trouble they've got themselves into is they've been trying so hard to make AI safe.
Yes.
According to whomever's definition of safe, they are trying to guess and they get into trouble with that. But it's just hard to do. So that's part of the problem. But I think reversibility is a key thing. I think at the moment it is software. It can be turned off. It can be pulled back. It can be updated. It can be, for things that we're seeing thus far, be made safe. Now, there might be a future in which it's out there and adopted so much that we can't do it. And I think more along the lines of, we chose to have the internal combustion engine. And once we'd done that for half a century or more, it was very hard to switch to electric or something like that. But simply because of installed base. And so we may end up with situations like that. But I just don't think it's a big factor at the moment. But if regulators want to think about it, thinking about how to design those regulations to make things reversible, to allow that scaling back to occur if harms occur, that would be a good thing. And I don't personally have too many great ideas on how to do that. It's partly technical, but there are entire communities of AI safety who are thinking about those things. And maybe that is a way to go.
Now, your work is done from the point of view of like a social planner. We call it the regulator, but it's someone who makes the rules. Should we really be thinking about extending this work and bringing in the concepts of, first of all, different nation states, competing, business, public opinion? That all complicates the thinking, doesn't it?
I think it most definitely does. It's very easy to think of situations that if one country decided to pause AI, it might not be in the interest of other countries to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, from a global point of view, what have we really gained from it? So there is that aspect to all of this. There's also the aspect of what the companies are doing themselves. As I said, my paper was, what should we be trying to do, as opposed to, are we achieving it or not achieving it? My conjecture is that the companies, the big companies especially, are overly cautious. And so I think the regulators are getting all the pause they want out of that anyway. But this is the thing with these companies is, yes, they can go around doing whatever they want and they don't have to worry about compensation damages and stuff. What's a few billion here or whatever it is. But at the same time, what really matters for them is their brand.
Mm-hmm.
That's extremely valuable. And so if they put out stuff that is unsafe, offensive, causing problems, that can really harm their brand. And we know with these tech companies, branding is fickle.
Yeah.
I remember times when we liked Google and Facebook. I remember times when we liked Amazon. I remember times, the converse, where we hated Microsoft. I think that's what's going on. And so that's what they're taking their actions for. By contrast, the startups are not encumbered by that at all. So that's why the regulation is going to have a higher and more salient impact on their activities than on the larger firms.
How important is it to get the academics, the regulators, the startups, and the general public all sort of speaking the same language? There is that tendency for all of us to talk past each other at the moment about this.
I believe in the unifying power of economics. I watch these debates occur.
Yeah.
And people do speak past each other. And people do have their own beliefs and conjectures and concerns. I see my role as one of trying to listen to those arguments, no matter how crazy they might seem to me in terms of my gut instinct initially to listen to them and to try and give them their due in order to work out what's really at the heart of a disagreement. I think it's much better if we're talking about, for instance, different ways of learning about the harms of AI rather than just speculating on those harms or also going in and saying, no, whatever harm it is, we'll deal with it because we're great engineers. And I've seen both of those sides and I don't like either of those approaches. What I like instead is to say, okay, this is an uncertain situation. What do we do in uncertain situations? How should we handle it? And to go from that first principle rather than trying to put out or start fires as the case may be.
Joshua, how important is it that we get this right?
That's a very interesting question. I actually believe in the power of regulators. There's a group out there that sort of say, whatever regulators do, it's not really going to matter. But I actually think they can put in these frictions. There is a lot of activity going on at the moment with respect to AI that is immensely positive. But I almost think it's probability one that we'll have one of these harmful incidents. A thing that we can point to this thing called AI and blame it on that causes a power grid to come down or who knows what. I worry that the response to that will be a complete overreaction to suppress everything that has the label AI. As we know, we're not talking about real artificial intelligence here. We're talking about use of computational statistics. Some of the regulations get drafted and you wonder if you're allowed to run a regression on a spreadsheet anymore. So that overreaction is something that I think may well occur. I fear that these antitrust action, the belief that you're getting it all under control, is going to lull us and cause us to have more variability and a wilder ride in the future. What I'd rather see is a slow burn of learning about these things and reacting to things as they come up.
Joshua Gans, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joshua's paper, which, let's be definite, is certainly not a thought experiment, is called How Learning About Harms Impacts the Optimal Rate of Artificial Intelligence Adoption. It's available now, and it will also be published in the Economic Policy Special Edition about AI.
This has been a Vox Talk. We've been recording at the 79th Economic Policy Panel in Brussels, but next week we're back in the studio, bringing you the latest economic research. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.